Hello! Welcome to the world of Pokemon. My name is Nick. Usually these guys call me their Game Master, and you're listening to Pokemon Rollout, a real-play Pokemon Tabletop United RPG podcast. What's your name?
I'm Paul, and I usually play Charlie. Let's answer some questions, Pine.
And I'm Michael, and I usually play Professor Rudimentus. I'm not going to call you my Game Master this time. Sneeze.
Determinedly confrontational.
I'm Lydia, and I usually play Liliana. You guys are brothers? Shadow Garden.
Oh, dear.
Oh, Nick, I'm so glad you just said, oh, dear.
Wait, I got a Pokemon Rollout bingo.
Yes.
In reality, actually, yes. There's a question relating to this, so I'm excited.
Oh. All right.
This is the Q&A episode. It's technically the second Q&A episode, but it's the first official full-length Q&A episode, and it might be the first of two Q&A episodes. We will find out.
I will say, last time we said, oh yeah, this is a short episode. It ended up being an hour long. So
this is another one. To be fair, an hour is pretty short.
Compared to some of our older episodes.
More like the Energizer Bunny. Keep going and going.
That's right, yes. Going.
Remember those commercials?
I do.
Yeah.
Classic.
We're all within the same age range to remember that.
That's true. Let's answer some questions.
Probably a good idea.
A perfect segue.
A very easy one by D. Harshman. Are Archie Grunge and Katana still a few weeks or a couple of months old?
Yeah.
Technically, yes. Because it's been at most a few months since they started. They began in late spring. It has been early to mid-fall, so yes, they're about 6 months or so old.
They're just babies!
Wow. Man, I'm
6 months-ish.
Totally a 90s kid when Nick goes, it's been, I'm like, 1 week?
Yes, man. That's why. Yes, that's exactly where my brain went.
Good old Digimon movie.
I like it.
That one's quick, straightforward, in the most technical sense, yes. As archetypes, they're older, but...
I would say it's interesting that you say technically. So, follow-up question, answer if you choose to. Are archetypes, in a sense, almost like avatars, where they pass down generationally, or...
More knowledge and experience than personality is the way I'd say it.
Okay, cool. All right, my turn. My question comes from the Purple Knight. Is Paul using his features tab yet? No. Why would I do that?
Real question is, what is a features tab?
Exactly.
What is the?
No. I had to verify. I had to pull it up on my character sheet.
Literally, if you type in your feature, it tells you what it does.
Yep. And so I do have my features in there. I see quick switch. I see round trip. I see keep fighting.
I think I put them there. But...
All right, so to answer that question, no, but I will try to use it more as I go along. I just like to go from the original source, you know.
The book is the original source, not
exactly. And that's where I usually read it from. So, anyway, no, we've actually had a hiatus for a while, and probably by the time that I realized there was the features tab, we haven't played a whole lot since then. At least that's my excuse.
I see.
Yeah, sure. A likely story. Mm-hmm. All right. Along the same vein of our fans throwing shade at our game playing abilities, Mary the Silly asks, why doesn't Professor Sneeze use his illusionist ability more? And, well, Mary the Silly, what a silly question. No. Let's see if I can take it. I can dish it out. No. I just found my features tab. No. So the illusionist capability, I do want to read this, what it says in the capability reference on my character sheet, and then that'll serve foundation for my answer here. So Pokemon or trainers, I'm going to insert that in brackets, with the illusionist capability can create minor visual illusions as a standard action. That's key, standard action. These may be no more than half a meter in any dimension, and produce no sensory sensations outside of sight. A lot of alliteration there, I like that. Any physical contact noticeably disrupts an illusion, and all other effects that see through illusions can do otherwise. otherwise, the illusion appears lifelike and can be made to move, though it cannot move farther than the user's focus rank in meters away from the user. Actively manipulating the illusion requires constant attention from the user. For minor effects, such as making an illusionary flame dance, this requires the user to constantly spend its swift actions. For more major effects, such as animating an illusory skeleton, the user must constantly spend standard actions. Okay, so that's a big fat paragraph of a description of this ability, this capability. And so I love the illusionist capability. I like making these fancy things. The problem is the cost is so so high for this. Standard actions being spent, especially to make things move. And even those things that are moving have to be relatively small, no more than half a meter any dimension.
Like an Amazon box.
Exactly, Amazon box size. So it's very small, very limited in that way. Also, convincing something that it's real is difficult as well. We've established some rules for that aren't in this. We house ruled that there's a focus rank check or focus check that any Pokemon or trainer that interacts with the illusion can make to see if it's real or not. So there's risk involved there as well. That's largely why I don't use it so often. Usually I have other things to do. My standard actions are spent attacking or sending out Pokemon or things like that, or I'm moving too much or too far away. Things like that. So in combat, it's not terribly applicable. However, I have noticed how little I've used it, and I've been thinking about ways to use it more outside of combat. It doesn't seem terribly good for combat itself, but for more story-based stuff. We'll see. Depending on what situation arises, I might use it more. There you go, Mary the Silly.
Yeah, P2 is very combat-focused, and the problem with any illusion power in any game that's not strictly bound by, like, video games, so it's within a system that's running in and of itself, is that it's very easy to break it, but if you don't break it, it's very easy to make it useless.
Right.
And so finding that balancing act is very hard.
Hey, this is Editor Lydia here, just popping in for a quick second to recommend that if you have not listened to episodes 55 to 60, to skip to the 10 minute and 30 second mark of this episode, just so you don't have those episodes spoiled. So I really liked this question, and I know we've talked about it before. I couldn't remember if it was in another Q&A or if it was in our Discord that we had talked about it, but from ThatGuy56. So ThatGuy56, regarding Spicy's situation with the type shift, Liliana choosing to risk him, actually, she's a lady, thank you, dying if she doesn't evolve soon enough. Thank you, Michael. Instead of curing or augmenting her. I was wondering if you guys think this would be present in Charlie and Sneeze's minds after the incidents where Pokemon were accidentally killed, especially considering the amount of anger from Liliana directed towards them. I remember talking with Nick about this because I knew with Liliana, especially with how much Spicy means to her, because Spicy is the first Pokemon that she's ever had, she would not intentionally choose something that would cause Spicy a great amount of pain. So I can see where there's the argument of, if she's going to be type shifted, then, you know, wouldn't that be causing her pain? Because she's essentially undergoing a death. But I remember talking with Nick about this. And since Yash was the one that would be helping Spicy, Spicy wouldn't be feeling any sort of pain. It would be healthy and a secure way for her to get type shifted, much different from how the futurists were augmenting different Pokemon and type shifting them with the Aklis Fine. So there's my spiel on that. But that's a really fair question. I think that's really good, especially
it is
regarding what's going on right now in the campaign.
From a role-playing perspective, for Sneeze at least, this was handled outside of gameplay. This was during a time jump when that type shift happened for Spice. Like, the pre-existing condition was there in gameplay, but then the type shift itself happened in a time jump. So as a player, this was handled for between Lydia and Nick. I don't know a lot about it, so it's not in my mind. And I guess if it came up in the game, Sneeze might have questions about it. But also, I don't know. There are other things that we've dealt with It'd be interesting to examine and talk about in the game itself.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, the other thing to think about is, like, a ghost-type Pokemon isn't necessarily dead, right? Like, I know it's associated with death and spirits and whatnot, but ghost-type doesn't just automatically mean a Pokemon dies, or it doesn't mean Pokemon dies, it doesn't mean that it becomes ghost-type. So I think that's another thing where just type-shifting spicy to be ghost-type is different from it dying.
I will go down to Arlink. For a Nick question, is the Chandy region based on any real life country? And I was refreshing my memory for a couple things. It is very loosely based in its physical shape, the territory of it, on India. Also, the conflicts between the Chen and the Di is even more loosely based on the Aryan invasion / occupation / intermixing that occurred in 1500 BC between the Indians and the group of Aryan group, because there was a lot of conflict. They were a more nomadic group that came in. They would eat meat and especially beef, which went directly against the tenets of Hinduism. There's a lot, like, that was the very, like, the little I remembered from history class was the drop of baseline that I extended out in a completely different direction. I'm not attempting to make any sort of commentary on that. It's simply, that's what I connected it to.
It is a fascinating bit of history that I know very little about.
That's what it's based on. It also helps. The other thing for it is that India is well known for being isolated for much of its history because of the ocean on three sides and a mountain range covering off the fourth. And so that helps with the Chandy region being isolated both from the other regions, from the Chan and the D side, and all of those there.
That's cool. I didn't know that. I learned something new there today.
I think if you look at the map, and if I remember correctly, if you look at the map of the Chandy region that I sloppily created in MS Paint, I either directly traced over a mock-up of India's coastline, or I took it and just did, like, line by line so that it was much rougher. But it's fairly close in shape. Yeah.
All right. Since we've been asking a lot of questions related to the podcast, I'm going to continue with that if you guys are all right with that.
Sure.
I'm going to go with this one here from Alpha. Which human NPC do each of you like the most and why? And I think I have a couple of answers, but I think I just settled on one that I like quite a bit. Charlie likes him quite a bit, but anyways. Does anyone want to has anyone thought about this? Does anyone have an answer right away?
If you've got an answer, I'd say you go for it.
Go ahead.
Right. Start us off. The one that came to mind right away for me, and maybe I'm not remembering all of the NPCs, but I kind of Tulip. She's weird. She's part of the futurist, but still familiar with the cast. Not Professor Mankineel. So I like Tulip quite a bit. The other one that Charlie likes a lot is Auntie Herb.
Happy birthday! Oh my gosh, dear. I completely forgot about that. That's such an awesome callback.
Yes. And then Satomi also has a character we're probably never going to see again, but Satomi was a fun character to try and play off a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Satomi.
In case you don't recall, Satomi was the person that Charlie battled. She had the Aerodactyl in the tournament, and Charlie kind of had a thing for her, so.
Like, I was trying to run through. Tulip was honestly the first one that came to my mind as well. She feels like a really good demi-boss with lots that's interesting in there. Oh, I had another one that just came to mind, but shoot. God's gone. I was thinking of one, but it was there. Anyway, go on, Lydia.
Yeah, Tulip is great. I didn't even think about Tulip, but that's a really good call out. And also Granny. That's a good one too. I'm pulling a Michael. I just had the name.
Oh, McCool was one. McCool was one that I thought was really cool.
That's who I was thinking Paul was going to say, because he always messed up the name.
Okay.
I thought it was pretty cool.
McCool. Yes.
Charlie messes up all the names.
Alongside great. With McSteamy and McDreamy.
That's right, into Grey's Anatomy.
And that's all I know about those characters or that show at all.
Lies. You watch it with Sarah when she watches it. I can tell.
She has never watched
it. Really?
She's an Outlander girl.
I know that one of them is the main male lead in the chapter.
That's McDreamy.
That's McDreamy, yes. Patrick Dempsey.
Patrick Dempsey.
I know him from Enchanted and Enchanted exclusively.
That's fair.
All right. But anyways, you like McCool, though?
I like McCool.
Now I remember. I feel really dumb now for forgetting the name. But Eileen. I love Eileen. Eileen's great. Eileen's just...
Hold on.
She's not human.
She's not human.
Oh. But, okay, but NPC, does it have to be human, or can it just be a character?
Alpha specifically asked human NPC.
I didn't read that question thoroughly.
Way to disrespect the fans, Lydia.
I'm sorry, Alpha. Sorry. I take it back. I hate Eileen.
Whoa. Wait. That's just mean.
Whoa.
I'm just kidding.
I hate to say it, but I think if it was just NPC, Eileen would probably be at the top of the list for most.
Yeah, she's up there.
She has the presence.
The one other that I thought of, but I didn't want to say because I wanted to give Lydia a chance to say it first if she wanted. Did you just say it?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. My nemesis. Yeah, no, I love Jared. Jared is so much fun. I want more Jared.
So I re-listened to our Q&A minisode recently, and like Watts made the comment of going to another region and finding the champion there, and it's like, Jared, yes, oh, it's perfect. Jared needs to be the champion.
Yes.
What a Gary Oak move that would be.
Right. What exactly?
Well, that's why we haven't seen you in a few weeks.
You were way off over there.
I guess if I can answer this, this is a kind of a weird way for me to answer it because I'm playing all of these. But it's interesting. I think I've mentioned before, Satomi is a character I played in one of my first PTU games, which was an interesting Cinnabar game. She had an ancient Charmander that she was evolving that was like a magma type almost. It was like living magma and different things and had this whole set of... It was a much heavier game than this is.
No, not possible.
There was interesting things with that.
No.
We never laugh.
I was listening for it. Yeah, McCool was fun to play. That I thought it would be more controversial, but yeah, the first one that popped into my head of thinking of playing was actually Tulip, of all the strangest things. If I'm remembering correctly, I brought in the tournament because I was like, I want there to be some time. People wanted to see you guys run into more NPCs and run into things there. So I was like, okay, let's do a tournament. This will be fun. I want something else going on while this tournament is going on so that when you're kicked out, you can do something. Because there's going to be two people in the last battle, so no matter what, one of you will not make it to the finals. And so it's, okay, it says you can do something. So I'm like, okay, the futurist should be doing something. I need someone to do the futurists. Let's make this character. And it was Tulip. And it's oddly enjoyable to make a character that is so quietly unhinged.
Out of pocket, as the kids say.
And to play a character like that's just like, I enjoy all of you. I enjoy playing. I enjoy all of you. I enjoy all of you. I legitimately have fondness for all of you. And that does not change the fact that my moral compass is possibly... It may not exist, let alone just be broken.
Also, Tournament Arc, the announcer. We got a shout out to the announcer.
He's great.
Oh, yeah. Good old announcer.
All right. I'm gonna move us on to the next question. I'm going to take this one from Super Duper Dope X asking, narratively, how would you guys evolve boss?
Hey, this is Editor Lydia again, just quickly popping in to say that if you haven't listened to episode 72 just yet, you will want to skip to the 25 minute and 30 second mark, just so you don't have that spoiled for you.
Lydia, we might need to put a spoiler marker on this one too,
sure.
Just because of two things. One, boss is a primate, so there's a chance that you haven't gotten that
primate.
Far. What'd I say?
You said the real
thing.
You
said primate.
I said primate. No, he's a primate. Yes. He's a primate and a primate. We could argue, is he a primate? No, we're not going to do that. He's a primate. But also, I think it was the episode when we left Landsmeet that he learned Rage Fist.
Yes.
With a TM. Was it a TM or a mentor? It was a mentor.
It was a mentor. Yeah, you went in and got a mentor.
Taught him Rage Fist. Mm-hmm. Mechanically speaking, he can evolve soon-ish. I don't think I've used Rage Fist with him even once. yet, though.
Not yet, no.
Just hasn't come up. But narratively speaking, this is, I've thought about this a little bit, and I obviously it's going to be a collaborative effort one way or the other. Nick's going to have to set up the situation, and Boss is going to have to be in that situation for it to happen. But I love the idea, the image. As soon as I saw Annihilape, I had the image of how this would happen to Boss. And the image that I've had in my head is just that classic guy fantasy of dying for glory, where Boss is fighting and fighting and fighting. And I love the idea of he is standing in the breach against an enemy that, like, we've been unable to do anything to, and he's just the one wailing on this thing. And so he's just rage fist, rage fist, rage fist, and it's draining him, and he's being drained and destroyed and stuff. And then it comes down to his final, his 20th rage fist, right? And he just punches this last thing, whatever it is, and fades away as it happens, but then Jedi transforms into Annihilape. I don't know.
And we finally defeat the Tangela.
And then the Tangela is defeated.
What a call.
That is something. I keep forgetting, but I have in my back pocket that if I ever really want to make you guys either annoyed or scare you, I just need to drop a Tangrowth. Oh.
See, the thing is, though, Sneeze's strategy with his Pokemon has become very close to that without the grass. So, like,
yeah, pretty much.
We would have a standoff for a while.
Yep.
It would become that episode, what is that, episode 3 of the original anime?
Yeah.
Use Harden, use Harden, use Harden.
Episode 4. I knew it was early.
I think there would just be a scenario. I know mechanically it's use Rage Fist 20 times, but we don't necessarily have to adhere to that per se. But there could just be a situation where Boss is getting super angry at a fight for some reason. Maybe he keeps getting footed back, and we keep pushing him in, bringing him back for one reason or another, and he just gets so angry that he dies. That's what the actual lore is.
Like, he's already had a moment where he got hit by a super effective move, hung on with 1 HP and anger point activated, so he just burst out and destroyed the thing, didn't he? He's done that at least once.
It sounds very Boss.
Yeah, and so there is a precedent for that being like, I just got hit by something that should destroy me, but it's not going to. And so that makes a lot of sense for Boss's character. And there's been like, you have an interesting thing. Like, it's not perfectly aligned for each of you, but you all do have, you have your starters, which have their moments and their things, and have had their limelight moments and have gone back and have had more or less things there for it. You have your archetypes, which are more integrally connected to the main story and so are having their boot ups there. And then you each kind of have at least one Pokemon that has become a fan favorite or a dark horse or something that is used enough that they have developed enough personality that when things happen with them, those things are important to the story at large. Like, Boss is one, Sparky is one, definitely. Giggles has flirted with that quite a bit, so Giggles might
Giggles
be there.
Or maybe Nilly, like there's...
Nilly, yes, yeah. Nilly's much
we
more.
We need to talk. I want to handle something with Nilly, but that's... There are honestly a few unresolved things with Charlie that I need to handle. There's things with Nilly I want to resolve, and then also I gotta get that stinking Malamar, like, we need to sometime take a moment and get that Malamar back to that person.
Yep. Yeah. That needs to be an episode. I'll also, relatedly, thinking of we need to have a conversation and we need to do this. And speaking of NPCs, also, is all of Sneeze's siblings. I've given names and general auras to all of his siblings. We've met two of them, Urbala and Augmentus.
Yep.
I would like to see Augmentus come back at some point. Not that I don't want to see Urbala come back, but Augmentus is more of an antagonist type. But then, speaking of Boss, also, I want to meet a brother that we haven't met of Sneeze's, whose name is Pugnatus.
I see. It's been a while since I've looked them over, and I keep forgetting.
So I'm guessing that Pugnatus is the root of that pugilism, like fighter?
Yes.
That's boss's fight right there.
And I already planned on him having one of his partner Pokemon as a Medicham. And I love the idea of what would boss do meeting a Medicham.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where this got so, and you guys have, I'm sure, have run into this thing. This got so much, it didn't necessarily get so much bigger than I expected, but it has sprawled simply because of time and the things we're going through and me doing my best to honor the decisions you're making and fitting them within the things that the world lives according to what you're doing, not just what's in my mind and what's going on through that. That is just like, oh yeah, this thing happened. How do I bring that back in?
Oh yeah, that.
Tulip has been sitting in my brain and until just now we talked about her again. I was like, oh, right, she exists. She needs to come back.
Yes. Let's keep going with these questions.
I don't think I ever said this. But very quickly, yeah, and then we'll go back to it. I'm just looking at her sheet and her skill background is bubbly med student, which I find very funny. But
love that.
I just had my eye on it. Oh, here we go. So to go back to my initial comment at the beginning of the episode from Purple Knight, what is each player's favorite Nickism? What's your favorite moment that you made him say that in the show, if you remember?
I feel like half of the things that Charlie says just receives an oh dear.
Can we just say sigh?
I do believe a handful of these episodes is just like Nick, just like the school teacher who's trying to get through a lesson and the students are messing around. It's just, oh, can we just get on with this, please?
Is this very healing for you then, Paul, when you get to do these recordings? Are you like, I don't have to be the teacher this time?
I feel like the golden zone for Pokemon rollout is somewhere between utter chaos and Nick being fed up with us. Somewhere in between there. Oh,
boy. Well, it's a thing of, there are two different versions of you guys going off on something. There's the version where it's still jokes, it's still running, but you're doing things in the world that support that or work with it or build with it. And then I play with it and run with it. And then there's the, we have found a joke, we're going to play with this joke, and we're going to stare at this joke. And then another joke comes in and plays with this joke too. And we've forgotten that there are dice. Which isn't always a bad thing, but it's, but after a certain point, it's like, right now, all I'm seeing is this is all happening, and then you cut to the real world, or the, not the real world, but the Chandy world, and your three characters just staring at each other.
No, yeah. Like, as a listener of podcasts, podcasts need that element of, no, pull us back to the actual gameplay. Because, yeah. Like, I love hearing everybody having their fun and whatnot, but, like, I'm also here for the story,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I want to hear that. And so, like, it's necessary.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Using the framework to do something I didn't expect you to do is fine. Ignoring the framework to play in the sand, we need to get back to the framework eventually.
Play in the sand.
Can I get a sand guess next?
No, Paul, we already had the beach episode, okay?
Yeah.
That is a complete aside, but with the Chandy region being based where it is, that is one thing. Water and oceans, I've mentioned this before, I couldn't do much with because you're on a peninsula that where you're avoiding the actual ocean most of the time, which has its own like little things where it's, oh, we don't use that biome that much, but that's an aside.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Next campaign, we'll just do a one-for-one recreation of One Piece.
You've already got Pirates in the Avatar special song.
We do, yeah.
Nick, you want to pick a next question?
Sure. I'll take the two from Sword and Buckler, because why not? The number one, what made you want to build the Chandy region is one where people regularly take the field with their Pokemon. The main thing behind that is PTU has, I think, roughly half, maybe not that much, but a fair number of the trainer classes either do active Pokemon support, which is where the trainers are actively buffing or pushing or doing something directly to make the Pokemon do things, or trainer combat. And so in order to basically say, hey, you can pick those classes, you don't just have to ignore them, I went towards the taking the field. That did have kind of the reverse effect where those were became a necessity. But since you can pick four classes, it's easier to take one of those and then do the rest than ignore one of those in all four entirely. But that's the main reason. It also, I guess the secondary thing, which isn't as important, but the secondary thing is it divorces it a little more from the game and to some extent the anime, which lets us do a little more with it. Like the same thing with the, I think I've mentioned before, the whole reason that they ran into the Nidoqueen with the Nidoran was to bring up the fact that if you run into a wild Pokemon, you do not immediately have to initiate battle. That was the teaching tool of that very first thing there. And so it's okay. Also, you can actively fight yourself. You can do other things there just to have that going through. The second question, how often do the Chan and D intermarry? It's been 300 years since they've mostly settled differences. And since, if you remember in the war, I believe I mentioned this right at the beginning. If I didn't, the whole battle between the Ravager Pokemon and the Thing had a, if I remember correctly, a 60% mortality rate. There weren't many people left afterwards. There was enough to be sustainable, but it was a noticeable dent. And so intermarriage became easier from there, but it still wasn't a big thing. I think it's been relaxing more as time has gone by, but it's still something where, depending on the generation, you might get commentary. It wouldn't be a social taboo in most places. Trilithon Sanctuary, some places that are hidden out in the woods and outskirts might be a little more against it. Some of the Chan areas that are a little more urbanized in there might be against it, but it's less to be a taboo and more to be, oh, okay, I guess they did that.
My turn. So I was editing a meme that I'm going to post in our chat in a moment here.
Stop being funny!
This one's not that funny, but...
To the game!
I had a very... I had a terrible response, which was, that requires him to start.
That's just me. Oh, to the heart. Worse than Lydia shooting me before. I have a couple that are non-podcast related that I might want to go and address here. Let me just look here real quick and see if there's... Okay, here's one that is podcast related, and I think that we will hang on to... we'll ask here. This is from Aurum Azure. I know I'm pronouncing it wrong. I apologize. If the main party was a normal D&D class, what would they be?
What would each of you be as a class?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Which is... I think I have... Liliana pegged pretty well. I think we all have Liliana pegged pretty well.
Oh, yeah. That's easy.
That's pretty obvious. Yes. Yeah.
Well, it helps, too, that the name for NPTU is the same as in D&D as well for rogue. Yeah. So that helps. Yeah.
She's a rogue.
Yeah.
What would you say? What do you think about for Professor Sneeze while I look up D&D classes?
Well, I'm trying to think of a reason that he wouldn't be a wizard.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking off the top of my head, yeah.
Just because of the intelligence emphasis, researcher, all that, and then the magic prism, like...
The other line I would say is celestial bloodline sorcerer, but with the light and the prisming. But...
That, yeah, sorcerer was pretty close there, too, but I don't know, like, that researcher aspect to it feels like it ties pretty close to wizard. He's squishy like a wizard, and... likes to have some bulk out in front of him while he's doing his thing.
I think for Charlie, and I'm just digging around through these here, I feel like he would either be... Charlie feels like a bard, doesn't he?
Kinda, yeah.
Charlie feels like a bard?
You're a bard who multiclassed into warlock.
Into warlock? Why do you say warlock?
With hex maniac.
Oh yeah, the hex stuff. Yeah, I forgot about that aspect, yeah.
The other one I was thinking about, too, was Ranger, because your whole thing is to catch as many Pokemon as possible.
That's true.
You're like a klepto, but for Pokemon.
But a Ranger knows his cardinal directions.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we gotta throw that one out the list. Sorry, guys.
Also, as I throw out this idea, what about an Artificer? Not really a hint of Artificer?
Mm. I was wondering about that.
I think he's been more earlier in the game.
Yeah, because I haven't crafted a Pokeball in a long time. Yeah, all those are good. I feel like strong bard feelings, but I can also see like all those other ones working in there as well.
I wonder here, too, if Liliana would also possibly fall under druid just because of how much she uses the darkness and shadows. I don't know. Mm. Does it work? Does that make sense?
I'd probably lean that more into a rogue prestige class, but I could see it. Something like Shadow Dancer or something.
One of those subclasses for rogues.
That does explain why all of your Pokemon tend to, like, why you use Pokemon that tend to be on the bulkier side. You guys don't have a tank.
I try and dump as much HP into him as I can, but...
Should we do one more round and then save the rest?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We can cut that a little bit.
Yeah. No, we're going to leave that in.
Yeah, that'll stay.
We need that, it's not the meat, but it's like the sauce. We need the sauce.
The spicy fluff. Salsa. Mm-hmm.
We need the marshmallow in the Alfredo. Mm-mm, good.
Moving on. With that remark, assuming that Pokemon is normal, this is from Utensil. If given the opportunity to eat one, which Pokemon would you eat? And question two relates to this. Also, do you think shiny Pokemon would taste different?
I feel like shiny Pokemon would taste worse.
If given the opportunity to...
I'll answer that first.
Shiny Pokemon, like, it depends on which Pokemon and what color they're changing into.
I just feel some... Because basically a shiny is more or less a genetic defect, right? Kind of.
Sure.
Or a recessive gene.
Sure, that's how you make delicious apples.
That's a good point. I did see one person who, after Utensil had asked the question, had made a remark of, if somebody were to eat an albino cow, would it be different than eating just a regular cow? So I thought that was an interesting comment to make of, oh, is it just the color that's changing, or is it something more of a genetic difference of the Pokemon?
Sure. Yeah, what more is happening? With that in mind, I think, for me, personally, Michael, not Professor Sneeze, the most delicious Pokemon... might be a Lechonk.
Yeah.
Give me some of that Lechonk bacon. I'm not feeling Oinkalone. Like, Oinkalone is a little too lean for me. Yeah,
the fact that they're connected to perfume as well.
Like, the thing about the perfume for me, though, is what an interesting musk this bacon carries, right? What's a shiny Lechonk look like?
It looks like a regular pig.
It looks like a real... Oh, my goodness. So that would taste probably even better. I'm going to go a shiny Lechonk is probably going to taste even better than a regular Lechonk. That's my guess.
I did Google list of Pokemon to eat, and I think my first answer, though, would probably be, like, crustaceans. Give me a Clauncher or a Clawitzer. Krabby. Emax Kingler. Crab legs. Yeah. But then also...
So we're not going kosher with this at all.
No?
That's fine.
What Pokemon are kosher? That's the real question.
Also, Tepig, like, think of the bacon you'd get from a Tepig. Spicy bacon, right?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, there you go. Dude, that's not bad.
Those are probably, like, those would all be good. Those would all be good.
I also think, like, a Buffalant burger might be nice.
Yes, or just a Tauros burger.
Tauros jerky.
Either one.
Yes.
Ooh, Tauros jerky. Yes,
Buffalant burger, Tauros jerky. Ooh. That would also be amazing.
Sawsbuck jerky. Oh. Ooh, I'd love some Sawsbuck jerky. Yeah. Yes.
And then for the holidays, you have some Unpheasant.
Of course.
Unpheasant under glass.
As boring as this is, I would love to eat some vanilla ice, but that's just because my favorite food is ice cream, so that's...
I'd be careful about that. I heard someone have a theory about this. So one, I don't think it actually is ice cream. I think it's just like still and stuff on top. And two, why does a Pokemon look like food? Like, why would an animal want to look like food? It's a parasite.
To lure you in, yeah.
It's that's a parasite. A good point.
My thought on this too, I thought about Vanillish and Vanillice immediately when talking about eating Pokemon, but the reason I steered straight away from them is, like, I can eat a Lechonk without it having a face while I'm eating it.
Yeah.
But I can't eat a Vanillice without it having a face while I'm eating
it. You just turn it.
Just turn it. Turn it away. Look away.
Don't think about it. Don't think about it.
I was gonna say, a couple quick things with this. Yeah, the easy, like, simple answer would be things like Tauros, Miltank, I like Tepig for the spicier thing, Lechonk there. The Pokemon that is designed to be eaten is Alcremie. Literally, it is made of whipped cream, and the happier it is, the better. The way you raise an Alcremie is be very nice to it until it's time for dessert.
You say that so forebodingly.
Well, Tropius.
It's like that.
You show it to serve man, you show that it's there to help you, to help it and everything. But all that, and then...
It's like the curious oysters from Alice in Wonderland.
This popped into my head and is the worst idea, but Well, Arceus is deer-shaped. So the other option is Ho-Oh is literally a phoenix.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Question. Now, with the gift that keeps on giving with a phoenix, if you eat the entire phoenix, would that be painful when it gets reborn? Would you have, like, really bad smokers?
What's the timeline? Do I have 2 days or so before it?
There's the delicious and dungeon option where if you eat it, that's the only way to kill it, is to eat it and consume it and break it down that way. That's going to kill it entirely.
You look like you're
going to
cry, Lydia.
I'm just thinking about what you just said. That was not where my mind was at all, and now I'm regretting asking my follow-up question.
There's the option of eating it causes it to reform elsewhere, because it reforms where it dies, so therefore eating it has no effect on its reformation or its recreation. There's eating it gives you eternal life, which would probably end in its destruction as well, at least in some way, shape, or form, where you have essentially incorporated its eternal life into yourself, so it is returning to life, but in you. That could be an interesting storyline where you go on, like, how does your personality shift as the phoenix comes back to life as part of you?
There's also just the phoenix lore in general, which, if we're taking Ho-Oh as a phoenix itself, like, you kill a phoenix, it just immediately immolates, and so it's completely gone. Ooh. You would have to eat it partially alive in order to eat it at all.
Or unless, if you do it carefully, I feel like from death to immolation, there's got to be some point in there where you get a really good cooked bird.
You're right. You got to time it right.
Yeah, exactly.
Really quick.
Here's the other thing is, just looking at Blessing the Damned and the books in here, Ho-Oh hides itself in the sky because it is canonically, according to this book, able to gift true resurrection and is the only thing able to do so in the Pokemon universe. Mm. It has the power to resurrect others. It doesn't necessarily have immortality itself, which is its own side thing, but...
I just want to briefly say at this point that everybody who's stuck with us this long, congratulations, and please, you can blame Utensil for this whole conversation.
And this also, I have characters that I've made in different games and different strategies and things, and several half-built game systems around the eating of monsters and gaining their power, so this is something I have thought too much about.
I'm going to do just this one from Kobold Commander. Who is your favorite superhero and why?
I got my answer. It's been the same since I was probably about 10 or so. It's Spider-Man.
Forgot mine.
It's Spider-Man. Mm. He is fun, quippy, always has a creative way to get through things. I just love Spider-Man. He's my favorite. Yeah.
Mm. Mine is the Incredible Hulk. I've been longing for a good movie on Hulk, and I'm convinced that it has to be in the genre of horror in order for it to be good. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, that's the comic that I primarily collect. I collect other comics as well, but Hulk is the one that I will always collect. He's complex, I think. And it's similar to Superman. A writer has to have something interesting. You can do it wrong when you're writing the comic books, but you have to do something interesting to create a good conflict for the character. Like, Superman is invincible, right? What are you going to do to Superman? You have to do something creative. Similar to Hulk, like, he's indestructible. So you have to do something interesting with that. And the good writers will take that in a really interesting emotional direction, adding some complexities and complications throughout. And I have been very pleased with several arcs of Hulk, so...
I'll say, ever since meeting my husband, I've definitely learned much more than I ever thought I would about superheroes and things like that, because he is an avid comic collector, and I already got a good education growing up from my dad and some of my brothers, and now it's just apparently continuing into my adulthood. Although, he would probably disagree with me on this. I would say that a couple of my favorites, I don't know if I just have one favorite. Okay, I'll say my favorite is Storm. I love Storm. I think she's a great character. Storm, she's got a really interesting backstory. Mm-hmm. Her superpower is absolutely amazing. It's a little overpowered, awesome. Let's be honest, but she's great. I love her. I love her character. I also really like Nightcrawler. So I thought I'd just throw in a couple that aren't DC. As much as DC superheroes are fantastic as well, too. As far as like DC and Marvel go, I like them both equally. Maybe that's just because I'm not as big of a superhero buff, but I like both equally. There's stuff on both sides that are good.
I have witnessed the sine curve vacillation between which comics are good on and which are bad. Like, when Fair. Marvel is good, DC is bad. When DC is good, Marvel is bad. It's almost a universal fact, and I've seen it go both ways.
If we went just by comics owned, mine would end up being Howard the Duck, because I have two comics of Howard the Duck that I got at some point, and I don't remember why, and I don't know where they are, and that's the comics I have.
That's awesome.
The favorite, if we're going superhero, I would probably do the basic Superman. I like Superman. I like it. The straightforwardness, I like the ideal of the character, and I like that...
Mm-hmm. Yes! That's what makes him the best.
I like that the character is only boring if you find decency boring, to put it simply. Yeah. If thinking Superman is, and this is going too far, might probably being a little pretentious, but often thinking Superman is boring says more about you than it does about Superman.
I tend to agree.
Yeah, writers end up doing that, and then they do write a boring Superman, but they're not writing a good Superman in that case. If we went just character in the super your universe, I'd flip over into Marvel, and I, for some reason, I really enjoy Venom and the Venom symbiote and the whole idea behind it there. I like the original idea of Venom, which was much darker and more tragic and had an interesting setup. There was a whole idea with, instead of it being Eddie Brock in there, it was a young mother who was just about to give birth, and then there was a car accident that Spider-Man either prevented but not in time, or pseudo-caused and did what he could to stop it, but caused her to have a miscarriage, and then she was infected by the Venom symbiote, and that aspect of it being like looking into that of that dark reflection, which Eddie does a little bit for Spider-Man, but not as much of this is how you have failed even when you're doing your best. And the fact that Venom's original power among other things was, and he might still have this in some cases, but the original power was he could not be sensed by Spider-Man's Spidey sense. He was stealthed to Spider-Man entirely, which is its own paranoia threat of, and it also feeds into the shadow reflection of these are the things you miss when you're doing your superhero work and doing the best you can. These are the things you miss and don't see that have consequences, which is an interesting build to it. I also like the fact that when Venom isn't dealing with Spider-Man, it's not necessarily heroic, but it's at least anti-heroic, where it's just like, I don't really want to fight things, I don't really have an agenda to destroy things, I just kind of hate Spider-Man, and then I'll do other things after that. And that's interesting, is okay, you're what type of thing are you? I haven't been able to see the Venom movies lately. I've heard mixed reviews on them.
Yeah, but they're all right.
The feeling I got from it falls into the kind of thing of Venom without Spider-Man is missing a key point of its arc that shapes what Venom became, because the symbiote would not become Venom without first being Spider-Man's Venom suit. It simply wouldn't. It was a completely different creature before it ran into Spider-Man. And so building that whole thing, even seeing like what little I've seen of how the symbiotes work and how there's anti-venom and Carnage popping in, having these things, how they develop in their abilities and powers and all that stuff. It's like, this is... I also like... It's the weirdest thing because I don't seek out... I'm not a horror person, especially not a body horror person. But things that are essentially body horror but are not treated in a horror lens are fascinating to me. And that's Venom often, where it's just like, I can reshape my body into whatever I want it to be within certain reason and do different things with it. I'm more biomechanical or organic armor, organic weaponry, all that stuff is very interesting to me.
So in 2021, Marvel did a whole King in Black arc where it was like all the aliens that Venom came from were coming to Earth.
Ah, yes.
And Venom was at the center there. And it was a very interesting arc. It was very good. And then like from that, the run on Venom, I think it's still going now. The current writer on Venom is Al Ewing, who did one of my favorite writing arcs for Hulk. He wrote Immortal Hulk, for a few years, and so good. And I was tempted to start collecting the Venom comics that he was writing as well, simply because of his writing style. But I didn't, and I'm slightly regretting that. But
now I'm thinking more about superheroes and stuff, too. I think probably the coolest superhero I've seen has been Spawn, at least from what I've seen from, like, comic book covers.
Oh, Spawn is cool.
I just really like his design, and there's been different covers and stuff that I've seen of him depicted, but it's just really cool. I love it.
To let you know before you read the, like, Spawn is very interesting, very cool. Before you read it, because I got a compendium of it and read through it once, it is 90s grimdark edginess at its most 90s, most grimdark, and most edgy.
Yeah, Lux told me that I wouldn't like it.
Like, yeah, there's a lot going on and that's just unpleasantness shown very artistically to highlight the unpleasantness. It's unfortunate because it's, Spawn's fascinating, but yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing is that, like, I keep seeing all these, like, really cool comic book covers and stuff that he has for it. The comics themselves, but looking at just the covers, and then I'm like, it looks really cool. I'm super interested. And he's, this one isn't for you. I'm like, oh, okay. I trust your judgment and knowing me well enough to save me from this.
Quick bonus answer to go away from the comics specifically, although this is still kind of touching base with My Hero Academia. Outside of the big names, because you gotta love Midoriya, you gotta love Awa, as I said, he's so cool, and All Might. Mm. Away from those big ones, Mamillion.
Mamillion is a Superman archetype, so yeah.
You think so?
Oh yeah, he is the ideal character shown as being the ace. Yes, he shows that he does a lot of hard work, but he does the ace for it, and his defining character moment is, I'm going to keep fighting beyond the bounds of possibility to save one life. If that's not Superman, I don't know what is.
Quick question.
Bonus answer myself, too, is Darkwing Duck.
Yes!
Darkwing Duck!
Yes!
Yeah.
Let's get dangerous. Very nice.
Thanks a lot, Cobalt Commander. You really took over the rest of the episode.
Yeah. So that was good.
I like it.
So what you've learned from this is we're all nerds. If you didn't know that before this, why are you here?
It's like they've spent maybe they've spent 8 years with us, but 8 years worth of episodes with us.
Yeah, no, the thing is, I have the worst and nerdiest answer to who is my favorite superhero in actuality, because my favorite superhero is a character that I played in a 3-year-long play-by-post superhero game that I have since crowbarred into every fictional world I can possibly place them in.
Have they gotten into Pokemon rollout yet?
Is it Ellie? It's Ellie, isn't it?
It's not Ellie. We're not near an ocean, so I can't really crowbar them in as well.
Is that why you chose to do Chandy region? So you can try and steer away from that?
No, actually, the Chandy region and this superhero came into being at the same time.
Oh.
So they were separate.
Stroking my non-existent beard.
Hmm. Yeah, let me help you out there.
Thank you, my dudes.
Yep. We gotcha. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us this week. You can find us online at tapsreader.org/Pokemon-rollout, on X or Twitter at Pokeroll Podcast, and on Facebook, facebook.com/Pokerollout. Join our Facebook group, the Pokemon Rollout Tap Room. As long as you're not a robot, we'll approve your request to join. There you can join in the conversation with creators and fans and become a part of the Pokemon Rollout community. Also, follow our network on Twitter at Tapster Radio and check out some of our other great shows at tapsradio.org, like Intermission, Michael and Ethan in a Room with Scotch, Freddy Goes to a Podcast, and Us Play Fiasco. A special thank you to Rocco W. for our theme music, Electric Donkey Muscles, and feel free to check the show notes for any other music and sound effects used in this episode. I'm not sure how many there will be, but feel free to check. Once again, I'm Nick, and I have not posted on my Twitter in years. It's at PokerollNick, but...
Yeah, don't worry about me on Twitter. It's all good. But come talk to us in the Discord. That's where a lot of the chat happens when we're discussing the show. That's where we pull all the questions for this Q&A. That's where we talk about TCG Pocket. We talk about just all the things that are interesting to us at the time. We'll probably talk about Switch 2 stuff coming up pretty soon. So come join us there and talk about Pokemon stuff or Switch stuff with us.
On X, I'm at MGLILIENTHAL. I am active in the Discord. I am active on Substack at Good Pilgrim. That's the stuff that you can find me doing.
yeah, don't worry about X, whatever. But we do have our Instagram.
We might make an exit.
We do have an Instagram, which is just at Pokemon Rollout. So, yeah, go ahead and join us on there as well.
You can follow me on Behind Your Eyelie. That's Behind Your EYELI. If you like what we do here on Pokemon Rollout, most of the times we play a game, but this time we're answering questions, tell a friend, retweet us, and especially please rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. If you really like us, donate to us on Patreon, patreon.com/PokeRollPodcast, and get some sweet rewards. Special thanks to our patrons, Dr. Audino, Peter Stadmuller, Kyle Albert, Micah Greenspoon, Andrew Case, David Harshman, Taylor Bonforte, Michael Askablod, Jeffrey Sho, Casey DeFritas, Andrew Weil, Spencer Toole, Froxus, Arming Sword and Buckler, Starlink, Legendary, Scotty Newton, Ursa 93, Terry Pfau, Penguin, Vincent Nazarishan, Lauren Polson, Stephanie Reinauer, Lance, Big Fat Nuke, Daniel Mabry, Wern the Patronizer, Autumn and April Art, The Gaming Motion Artist, Magical Girl in Training, Justin Brennan, and Copperhead 9215. You guys are awesome, and we can't say it enough. We really appreciate all that you, the gentle listeners, do for us. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you later.
Bye. Goodbye. Nick and Michael are brothers.
About time.
Just this one time.
Say, did you figure this out? Did you just figure this out? I'm concerned.
Okay, I have to tell this quick story. So the one time that whenever I think about ice cream cones, I think about this one time when we were at Dairy Queen and my dad had gotten a cone. And around the Dairy Queen cones, they have that little layer of paper on it, right? So my mom's kind of gathering up the garbage and stuff from us kids. We're getting ready to go. And then she looks over at my dad and goes, Alan, where's the paper from your ice cream cone? And he looks down at the table and then just looks back up at her with this big grin. She goes, did you eat the paper? And he was so wrapped up in his conversation that he had just eaten it right along with the cone.
I've probably talked about this before, but I have a Ho-Oh figure. In fact, I'll show it to you right here. There you go. Here's my Ho-Oh figure. Okay. And my daughter, when she was like 2 or 3, was playing with this, and she goes, honk, 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 honk. It's a goose. Ho-Oh's a goose.
See, I was going to say turkey, but... Yeah. Like,
I like it.
I mean, have a Ho-Oh for Thanksgiving. That's a memorable Thanksgiving right there.
What is happening? Okay, there we go. I can excel. This is fine. Both in life and in the spreadsheet. There we go.
There we go.
Ah, nice.
Obscurantism and obfuscation.
Orally observed, gentle listener.
Gentle listener.
Gentle listener.
Gentle listener.
Obviated objects of oblivion.
Obambulating about.
Offered unto you.
Offered unto you.
Offered unto you.
In the Tapestry Radio Network.
TapestryRadio.org.
From our fancy to yours.